Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining us as always, Andrew Malcolm. I also called you Dwayne Patterson. What the heck am I doing? Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com. How can I screw this up? I've been off for two weeks. I'm already out of practice, man.
Yeah. The country's falling apart and you're gone and you're having a lovely time. Well, welcome back anyway, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad that you held the fort down for us while I was out and about doing my vacation thing, and had a good time, you know, visited friends and family, and got a few days off, and now I'm back in the thick of things. You know, it's like that Al Pacino line from a Godfather movie that I still refuse to acknowledge. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. So I pulled back in. Yeah. And you know, I see that I came back just in time because I was in the Twin Cities until about a week ago, Monday, right? Is when we were traveling back. And today, the DNC is in the Twin Cities, trying to rally the party from perhaps its modern Ned Deer, right? Yeah. And they kicked this thing off. Did you see this thing? They kicked this thing off with the land acknowledgement. Did you watch that clip? I think it was Ken Martin. We acknowledge that we're on stolen land. you guys are already off completely out of your minds, and you haven't even really gotten started yet.
Well, he's from there, right? And I think he works some with Walls, and they're tigers of a similar stripe. It's so sad because a fully functioning democracy needs two fully functioning parties. And at the moment, the Democrat Party is acting like Joe Biden, that totally out of it. And they refuse to acknowledge their mistake from last year, and they're doubling down. And now every party goes through these trauma times. The Republicans did after 1964. But in 1966, the GOP bounced right back. And in 1968, they took over the White House for five of the next six presidential elections. But now we're two-thirds of the way through the first year leading up to midterms. This is the time where you should be recruiting timely candidates, raising money, and the Dems aren't. They got, I think, like 15 million in the DNC bank account, and the RNC's got over 80 million, and Trump's PAC has 200 plus million.
And all through this, they're talking about land acknowledgement. They're starting off land acknowledgement.
I know they refuse to change. They didn't get the message that woke is dead.
Yeah. Did you see Tim Walz? I've got a couple of these things in for the final word. Now we're going to put this up on Tuesday, so the final word will have already been up by the time anybody sees this. But I'm going through some of this stuff for the final word post because I thought, well, this is a fun topic for the final word. And I'm watching. The first one I watched was Tim Walz going, "I could choose to be a Republican. I just have to stick a red hat on my head and pledge loyalty to a dictator." It's like, yeah, please be on the ticket for the next three or four presidential cycles. Please be on the ticket. Governor Jazz Hands McSnitchline, the guy who tried to get neighbors to rat on each other during the pandemic for having people over to their houses and going to church, is sitting up there talking about dictators and blind loyalty to political figures. This guy was participating and one of the biggest frauds on the American public ever, the Joe Biden regency.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't get it. They just don't.
No, they just don't bother. Remember when Minneapolis was burning, his wife said the smoke smelled good because it was a police station.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is just insane, right? So they're not listening. You know, we've talked about this a number of times. We're going to talk about polls in just a second, in another context, another topic here, you know, a related topic. But, you know, these guys still haven't figured out that their big problem is actually Trump. They can't get over the obsession. They can't talk about anything else other than Trump. And I have a post, in fact, it just went up while we're recording this. It's called the cornering strategy. Bill Clinton had a triangulation strategy to co-opt Republicans in 1994. It was brilliant, and he executed it brilliantly. But he took the party back to the center while doing that, right? Democrats are now sort of the victims of Trump's cornering strategy. He does things to provoke them so that they'll land on the 20% side of an 80-20 issue. And crime is just the latest one. Now, today, he signed an EO ending cashless bail in D.C. Now, they can do that. Federal government has jurisdiction over Washington, D.C., and the city council only has the authority that the federal government allows them to have. So he can do that in Washington, D.C., just the same way he can put National Guard troops in Washington, D.C., which has been very successful, right? They've gone 11 days in Washington, D.C. without a single homicide. And I don't even know when the last time that actually happened. Yeah. It might have been somewhere around the Ford's Theater era when that happened. So now he's got Democrats who are out there outraged that he is going to use the Department of Justice to try to, you know, basically bully other jurisdictions into ending cashless bail, which is a big progressive, you know, agenda item. It was a big progressive agenda item. Now, Trump probably can't force them to do that. I don't even think that he can withhold federal funds on that basis. I mean, it'll get tied up in courts. It's not the point.
Exactly.
The same thing's true of his suggestion that he could send the National Guard into Chicago to do what they're doing in Washington, D.C. He really can't. I mean, legally, he really can't do that. He'd have to get permission from J.B. Pritzker to do that. And J.B. Pritzker is never going to agree to that. Same thing's true in San Francisco with Gavin Newsom. He'd have to, because states have sovereignty and the federal government doesn't actually have jurisdiction over the city of Chicago.
Well, he did it in Los Angeles, but that was to protect federal property.
Right. It was to protect federal property and to protect federal agencies, federal law enforcement that were actually doing things that they do have jurisdiction for, which is immigration. Now, if it's something like that, if they're doing immigration raids, yeah, you can send in the National Guard to protect them. But he's talking about doing law enforcement, which you can't do. The federal government can't do that in cities like Chicago because they don't have the jurisdiction. They have to be invited to do that. He's provoking these fights because it forces Democrats to go on the side of criminals and criminality. it's so obvious. He's been doing this all year long. I decided to call it the cornering strategy because he keeps allowing Democrats to paint themselves into corners, defending things like illegal immigrants, human traffickers.
Against the wall, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. And these guys still haven't figured it out because they don't actually have an agenda other than we just hate Donald Trump and anything he says or does, we're going to oppose because
He has lived in their heads since the very beginning, since just before Hillary Clinton did not inherit the White House.
Yeah. When she was not crowned, when she didn't receive her coronation. And that's right. They're still angry about that. To this day, they're angry about that. So they're in Minneapolis, presumably to figure out how they can stop losing, right? And to start getting people to donate to them again, which is a whole story in and of itself, right? Because ActBlue has basically been derailed. The USAID funds have been cut off. The feedback loops are gone, and now they can't raise money for hardly anything other than their own autopsy is basically.
A lot of the big time donors were really angry when they got fooled into Biden is as sharp as a tack. And that whole conspiracy, and then sticking the party with Kamala Harris, who burned through, this is just blows my mind, who burned through $100 million every 7 days in her 15-week campaign. $1.5 billion of somebody else's money. And I'm just wasted $1 million to Oprah Winfrey. Now, Oprah Winfrey had an argument. She said, oh, she didn't pay me $1 million. And the media jumped on that. But the reality is she paid Oprah Winfrey's company $1 million.
Right.
As if that's a difference. So it was a total sham, and all arranged by Nancy Pelosi. And so they're not writing checks so far. Now, presumably, they'll come around, but they're not falling for the orange man bad thing anymore. There needs to be more.
Well, they're tired of it because Democrats aren't addressing the issues. And the reason why is because they're so far out on the issues. To me, and I was making this argument with some friends today, this is sort of like the collapse of late night TV. Late night TV decided that they were going to curate their audience down to the progressives by doing nothing but Trump bashing and Republican bashing and strident political commentary and that sort of thing. And that's fine. It's their right to do that. But those are very expensive shows, and their audience dwindled down to basically Antifa. And they got Antifa-like ratings. And that's what's happened with the Democrats, is they're basically boiled themselves down to an Antifa agenda, and they're getting Antifa money from, you know, voters are walking away. And the reason why, you know, Harvard Harris has one of its monthly polls out, just came out a couple of days ago. And the issue sets still look exactly the same. You still have 75% of people who want criminal, illegal aliens deported. You've got 67% roughly, you know, it's a 60-40, 65-35, 70-30, 80-20 thing, all the way down this issue set, until you get to, I think there's one issue that Trump is underwater on. And this whole issue set, there must be like 15 of these things. And that's been the way it's been all year long. And Democrats still don't have an answer for that, because they're not addressing the issue, they're just addressing Trump. And it's not working. They've been doing this now for really 10 years, but certainly intensely for the last 2.5. And it's not working, and they're... answer to that is, we must not be shrieking loud enough.
That's right. That's a perfect line. Not shrieking loud enough. Yeah. And they aren't. They've got nothing but falling a victim to Trump's suggested topics. And
it's kind of like that line from and Beej likes to quote this too. Both Beej and I like to quote this line. You remember Beverly Hills Cop with Eddie Murphy, the first one?
Yeah.
Remember when he wants to get away from Judge Reinhold, and I can't remember the actor who plays the other cop, and he sticks bananas in the tailpipes? And then the guys that are sent out initially to replace the other cops, because the other cops screwed up in following him, said, we're not going to fall for that banana in the tailpipe trick. Well, Democrats keep falling for the banana in the tailpipe trick.
Banana in the tailpipe. It's just such a funny image.
I mean, it's a great part of the of the movie too. And you know, one of the fun things that happened with that is, I think it was the Mythbusters guys actually redid that just to see if it would do what the movie claimed it would do, which is to stall a car out. And I think they decided it wouldn't have worked, but it was still fun.
It's a funny, movies are about images, not reality.
Yeah. It's about fun, you know, and especially comedies like that, action comedies, you know. Nothing that happened in that movie would have ever actually happened in real life. One of the interesting things, though, this is a real tangent. Apparently, there's a part of the movie, and you got to remember, this movie came out in, I believe, 82, where the lieutenant is at the police station, right? This really high-tech police station in Beverly Hills, because they got the best of everything, right? And he tells us, he says, where's T Taggart's car right now, and they look it up like on a map thing. And say, oh, well, he's in front of this address. What's that address? And they go, oh, it's this person. There wasn't any such car tracking system. That didn't come until a few years later. So they basically, you know, LoJack, I think, was the first. And they're still around, by the way. But basically now it's just all, a lot of cars just have tracking systems with them. You can track your car. You can get in an app and track your car.
And you can track cell phones. There's things for apps for family phones. Tell you where your kid's school bus is.
So with all that in mind, getting away from Beverly Hills Cop for a second, with all that in mind, you pointed out something that The Hill ran about the Economist YouGov poll showing that Trump's, you know, rating is dropping. Now, I think people have a misconception that he is tremendously popular at the moment. And that's not the case, at least in terms of polling. But I will say that the Economist YouGov poll is probably not the most reliable measure of this. And I also, well, let me, why don't you tell us what the poll found? Tell us what the poll found, and I'll tell you where I think that this falls in.
Well, you already said it, that his approval rating is falling, and they like to hang that on the Ukraine, on the economy, and worried about tariffs and prices not going down. But nobody ever said prices were going down. We're talking about trying to stop inflation. And the whole media mantra is that Trump is in trouble on polls. But the reality is that has not mattered in his political career.
Right.
You cannot like some things about Trump, but he is an historic political comet. The norms don't apply to him. And that's what makes him so fascinating for news media that love to hate him. He's so skilled. Do you remember another president who got two terms, who was in show business? It was Ronald Reagan. And Trump is not Ronald Reagan, but he has the same show business skills at a very successful quote reality show on NBC. And he's always been a showbiz guy. I mean, even when he was drafting Herschel Walker for his New Jersey football team, you know, I mean, it's all about showbiz, and it works. Now, he took it too far in the first term. He was not disciplined. If he wanted some attention, he would go out and have 3, 4, 5 media appearances, and because he wanted to say something about somebody in Congress, Mitch McConnell or somebody, Chuck Schumer, and that totally blew his own agenda off the rails, and it looked like chaos, and it was. But now I think Susie Wiles is crucial to this. Now he's much more focused. He doesn't fall for the obvious questions. I remember one reporter this spring saying, well, Mitch McConnell says he's not going to vote for the big, beautiful bill. And Trump said, we're not talking about Mitch McConnell today. Now, in the past, first term, he would have taken that bait and given the guy a story. And what Trump really wanted to talk about would have been blown out of the water, media-wise. So Trump is always savvy about the media, but he's savvier now about the timing and more disciplined, I think.
Well, I think so too. But still as accessible as ever, really.
Absolutely. And it's to his purpose. You know, Joe Biden, remember how often we saw Joe Biden? Well, he basically forfeited the presidential bully pulpit because he couldn't. They had to give him notes, the staff did, to sit down in the empty chair. He needed things like that. Well, Trump doesn't need a note for anything. Do you ever see him Use notes? No. So it gives the air of competence, knowing what's going on, and being in charge. And, you know, there's been a snowy blizzard of stuff that he's done since he's been in. And the Democrats, as you pointed out earlier, they can't handle it. They don't know what to do. They're overwhelmed. All they know to do is to go to a Joe Biden appointed judge and try to get a restraining order.
And most of the time, which plays right into his hands because it keeps them defending the indefensible. It's like with this Kilmar Abrego Garcia character, the guy who's been flagged for deportation since 2019, was caught doing human trafficking 3 years ago, and the Biden Department of Justice didn't want to pursue it. Now, this Department of Justice is pursuing it. He's had allegations of domestic violence. His wife has filed restraining orders against him, even though now she's 100% behind him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Democrats are arguing that this guy's some sort of a victim. And, you know, so I guess he's a victim in the same sort of sense that Minneapolis is resting on stolen land.
That's a good segue. But
to get back just really quickly to these polls, the Economist YouGov poll is YouGov is one of the poll series that really is, it really rates Trump on the low side. I mean, you can track it for trending, but it's not probably very, it's an outlier, really. Insider Advantage is an outlier to the other side and overrate Trump's popularity. But when you look at his Real Clear Politics aggregate average, right now he's underwater by 5 points, 46.1 to 51.1. That's actually pretty good for Trump. That's actually Barack Obama's numbers throughout most of his second term, actually. He was in the 46, 47 range that entire time. And for most of that time, his disapproval rating was above that. So there's not really that much going on there. I mean, I can remember in his first term when his average was more like at the high 30s rather than the low or even the mid 40s, right? So it's not that big of a deal. And the problem is that you said this earlier, it's kind of a non sequitur. I know he likes to troll people by saying he's going to run for a third term. He's not going to run for a third term. He's been 82 for the first place. And he's already talking about J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio would probably be the two people most likely to succeed him in 2028. He's just doing to get a rise out of people, right? And that's just Trump. He likes to troll people. But it doesn't really matter to him. And the reason why it doesn't need to matter to him is because he's on the 80 side of these 80-20 issues. It doesn't matter if people don't like him.
Right.
He's doing the things that they want. He's deporting criminal aliens. He's securing the border. He's blocking men from competing in women's sports and occupying women's spaces. He's trying, at least to some small extent, to eliminate waste and fraud in the government. And those types of things are going to be sustainable. Those are the things that sustain people. Whereas Democrats just keep thinking that this is some sort of a, you know, popularity contest that, you know, and that they're the cool kids. You know, they're the clicky kids in the quad.
That's right. They're the ones at the cool kids lunch table in high school. Yeah.
Right.
My only concern is that and I'm sure he'll have a plan to address this, but American voters have a very short memory. You know, it's like, we really liked what you did. Well, what have you done for us lately? The biggest issue last year was illegal immigration and mainly the border. And the border is closed. It's closed now. And we don't have even hundreds of people coming across the border every day. Now, I don't think it's practical. He's never going to get rid of 11 or 12 million illegal aliens, but he's smartly focusing on the criminals. And that'll be great to get rid of them. But he hasn't gone to the border. He should go to the border every few months. See how much longer it is now than when he took office. Talk with the guys about, boy, how many people came across today? None. Oh, wow, none. You know, if you just, you need to keep that as an accomplishment. Right now, it's in the rearview mirror, and people are focused on getting rid of illegal criminals. Well, okay, that's good. But I don't know that that's going to live for, what, 15, 16 more months as a great achievement. So I just wish he would go to the border. You know, if he go and if he's going to California or Arizona for something, he can go to the border and take an afternoon and pull it off. It's just important, I think, to keep reminding Americans that thousands of illegals were coming across the border with the other guy.
Every day. Every day. Yeah. All right. I want to get to a couple of your, well, I want to get at least to one of your columns if we can't get to both. Thursday, you had one, it was Wednesday, actually, Trump's battle to kill woke spreads into the heartland. And I think this is part of what we're seeing here at the DNC, right? Which is this nonsense of, you know, land acknowledgments and, you know, this diversity, equity, inclusion stuff that's going on in Minneapolis right now. They're not getting that message. And Trump's battle to kill woke spreads into the heartland is in, at least in part because the heartland's sick and tired of woke.
Exactly. And it's because, I mean, if you thought back in 2015, 16, of all 17 Republican candidates who wanted to be president, who would be the least likely to tap into the heartland would be a Fifth Avenue billionaire. I mean, it's just, but he was so smart. He picked up on it. He used it. He ran with it. And then, Ed, are you sitting down? He actually did what he said he was going to do. And he's doing it again. And he's doing it again now, which was the big bitch that the heartland had over Washington. Well, they say this at election time, but then they don't follow through. And Congress knew that. You know, most congressional people who run for re-election win without a significant issue or scandal. It's like 80 or 90% get re-elected. So there's a town hall that's noisy, and a year later, no one remembers it. And Congress and McConnell and all that crowd, they knew it. Well, the heartland knew it too, and Trump picked up on that, and he's played it like a first-year violinist. He's produced. So to me, this is a big strength. If you look at, as I said, the blizzard of stuff that he's done since he's come back, just since he's come back into office, he's done almost as many executive orders this time in the first, 7 months as he did in the whole 4 years. In the first term. So the message is gotten through, and the governor in Oklahoma appointed a superintendent of state education, and he got in touch with PragerU, and he sent them the certification qualifications for teachers. And then he sent them the certification qualifications for teachers in New York and California. And they developed a test. I think it's like 6 questions or so. And they are now applying this test to anyone from California or New York who applies to teach in Oklahoma. I don't know how many there are, but any who do must pass this test. And Ed, it asks such tricky questions as, what are the three words of the Constitution? Why is freedom of religion important? And they're trying to weed out anyone who's into the DEI woke agenda, because as he said, we don't want them polluting the minds of young people in Oklahoma. Well, right. That's a great thing, and it wouldn't have happened without President Trump.
Yeah, you know, and we could talk a little bit, I mean, we could talk at length for hours as to chicken and egg sort of thing. Did Trump get reelected because people got sick of woke, or did Trump inspire people to become sick of woke during the campaign? And for that matter, did Democrats' attempts to stick Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket have an impact on how people saw woke policies? And I suspect that there's elements of all of those things.
And plus a demented president. I mean, you know, a guy that has trouble opening a screen door, and that's on video, or, you know, that lost look that he had looking up at the sky for divine guidance. Everybody saw that. And even if they weren't going to denounce him as totally decrepit, they wouldn't vote for him. And
right.
It's, you know, it just, he only got elected. It was it the polls in 2020, 70% of Democrats said they were voting against Trump, not necessarily for Biden, but Biden right. seemed safe at the time. They hid him in the basement so you couldn't see that he was losing it.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so go check redstate.com for Trump's battle to kill woke spreads into the heartland. That's Andrew's latest is Facing Putin's War, Trump Struggles to Construct His Biggest Deal Ever piece. Be sure to read that as well. We didn't get a chance to get into that too much, but there's a lot going on, not just in Ukraine, but also there's some progress being made in Syria and Lebanon. Maybe not as much progress as we'd like to see, but there is some progress being made on the Abraham Accord expansion around Israel. So, yeah, this is as close as we're going to get. And I wrote about this in a post last, you know, it's going to go up tonight. You've got presidents going back to Truman who've tried to make a legacy out of bringing peace to the Middle East. Probably more Nixon forward, Nixon, Carter, you know, Reagan, et cetera, you know, Clinton for sure. And even Trump in the first term, Trump in the second term is getting closer than anybody's ever gotten. And in large part is because he's resolved a half dozen, wars, you know, maybe short wars, but still wars, this year already. And, you know, obviously not having a lot of luck on Ukraine, but he is making progress in Syria and Lebanon. It's kind of interesting to watch.
It is. It's fascinating to watch.
Right. And at least it's fascinating to you and me. Apparently not fascinating to the protection racket media, because they're hardly reporting on this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think people are learning what they can trust and what they can't trust. And certainly Hot Air and Red State are up near the top of the trustworthy outlets.
That's right. And you know what makes us trustworthy at Hot Air? The jokes of the day. That's the biggest boost to integrity, I think, in journalism in decades. The jokes of the day.
Do you have any jokes for us today? We don't yell and scream at each other. we are able to laugh. I have one.
All right. And I got one for you.
I forget where it came from, but they said that the Carnival Cruise Line, they opened the first floating Starbucks on a cruise ship, and already there's a homeless guy in the bathroom.
Okay. I've been to a couple of Starbucks. I had that feature. So yeah, that one lands with me. That was good. All right. I got one for you. A little risque, but it's still funny.
You're going blue on the jokes here recently.
Maybe blue's not the right word for it. Maybe periwinkle. I don't know. It's not quite that blue, but all right. Guy falls asleep on the beach for several hours, gets a horrible sunburn on the top of his legs. They take him into the emergency room, and the doctor admits him, you know, and gets him in the bed and tells the nurse, I want an IV hooked up with saline, electrolytes, sedative, and a Viagra pill every 4 hours. And the nurse looks at him and goes, a Viagra pill every 4 hours? What's that going to do for him? The doctor says, well, it's not going to do anything for his condition, but it'll keep the sheet off his legs for a while.
Jeez. Hell. Get the gong out. Yeah.
Yeah, that one deserves a gong. That was from jokesoftheday.net. I saw that today. I was like, I gotta tell Andrew this one.
Yep. Yep. Well, we shared there that with the world.
All right. We have shared that with the world. Exactly. All right. Andrew Malcolm, the prince of Twitter, the regent of redstate.com. Great that we can get back in the flow of things. We'll do this again next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that. Thanks, Ed. And thanks, everybody. See you then.